Welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and in this program we talk about the greatest medical and environmental threats to all life, such as nuclear weapons and nuclear power, global warming, ozone depletion, toxic pollution, deforestation, and many other social and political issues that relate to global well-being. So if you love this planet, keep listening. Hello and welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and today on the program I'm speaking with Ronnie Cummins, founder and director of the Organic Consumers Association, OCA, a non-profit US-based network of 850,000 consumers dedicated to safeguarding organic standards and promoting a sustainable system of agriculture and commerce. Cummins has been active as a writer and activist since the 1960s with extensive experience in human rights, anti-war, anti-nuclear, consumer, environmental and sustainable agricultural campaigns. He is also a frequent lecturer both in the US and abroad. Cummins has published numerous articles and authored a series of books called Children of the World. His most recent book is Genetically Engineered Food, a self-defense guide for consumers, published by Marlowe & Company in 2004. Ronnie Cummins joins me now online from Mexico. Welcome, Ronnie, to If You Love This Planet.
Good to be with you today.
Well, I must say I've been so involved with nuclear power and nuclear war and global warming and all that stuff. I do know about genetically engineered food. I have been reading about it with concern because I am a biologist and a physician. And, you know, inserting salmon genes into strawberries so that they won't freeze in cold weather and that sort of thing has alarmed me. And the common use of Roundup has alarmed me. But as I read the material that you've produced, Ronnie, it scares the bejesus out of me. And when I'm in Boston staying with my beloved son and grandchildren, I go to Whole Foods all the time thinking, oh boy, this food's great. You know, it looks terrific on the shelf and great fish and great vegetables. And now I read that they're involved with so-called natural foods. So can you explain, Ronnie, the difference between organic food and natural foods in terms of food labeling?
Yes. Well, in the United States, certified organic foods, the total sales are about $30 billion a year.
Wow.
U.S. And of the so-called natural sector, it's actually over $50 billion. So, and what's alarming is when you ask consumers, well, what's the difference between organic food, which has clear national and international standards and is, you know, monitored, and natural, which is basically a marketing term, which really has no established rules no guarantees that natural means anything. This is a huge industry. And when you ask consumers, well, what's the difference between natural and organic? In the U.S. and Canada, they often say, well, natural means it's almost organic, and it's a lot cheaper. And so that's the reason why natural outsells organic nearly 2-to-1 in the U.S. and Canada. And unfortunately, if you look at the actual ingredients of so-called natural foods in a place like Whole Foods and so on, which make up about 2/3 of their sales, they're often genetically engineered. And, of course, there's no such thing as a natural chemical fertilizer or a natural pesticide or herbicide, or, you know, so-called natural foods can be grown with sewage sludge in the U.S. The animals can be shot up with bovine growth hormone or, you know, administered other drugs. So it's a big scam. And unfortunately, in times of economic constraint, like we're under, most places, if you don't know the difference between natural and organic, you're often going to purchase natural because it's cheaper.
Well,
so that's a big issue. I mean, right now we're organic is about 4% of grocery store sales in the U.S., but natural is another 8%. And if natural foods were truthfully labeled, I think the percentage of organic would go up considerably. And given that we've got a climate crisis not only staring us in the face, but actually underway, and a real need to convert as many acres as possible to organic production, this the fraud of so-called natural foods is standing in the way. So in the U.S., finally, after over a decade, a number of states, including California, the grassroots are organizing a ballot initiative in Washington state and pushing for laws in states like Washington and Vermont, Connecticut, other states that would basically require genetically engineered foods to be labeled, and it would make it illegal to label a food that contained a genetically engineered ingredient. It would be illegal to label those or market them as natural. So we're hoping that as we can restore consumers' right to choose in the U.S., and this will have a big impact in Canada as well, that we will be able to drive these so-called natural foods into a transition to organic process, because that's, you know, that's what consumers think they are. Unfortunately, they're not. We got to make sure that they are. We got to put the natural back in natural, get the GMOs out, the pesticides, the chemical fertilizers, and so on. And then we'll be a lot further along the road to the tipping point that we need to where the majority of our food and farming can become organic, you know, just like it used to be until World War II.
Well, what does organic mean? It means no pesticides, no fungicides, no herbicides, no what, nasty fertilizers.
No genetic engineering.
No genetic engineering.
You can't use sewage sludge, and you can't drug up the animals. You can't give them any drugs. And you have to be inspected by an organic inspector one or more times a year. And if you get caught lying, there are criminal penalties for that.
And, okay, so natural foods, because there's no labeling of any food required in America, so people don't know if the food contains genetically engineered materials or not, right?
That's right. Like recently there have been some class action lawsuits filed. One of them was against ConAgra, the giant agricultural conglomerate, multinational. Mm. They produce a very popular non-organic cooking oil, Wesson oil. And they've been marketing this Wesson oil for years as, quote, all natural. But when you look at what's in this so-called all natural cooking oil, of course, it's genetically engineered soybeans and cottonseed oil and canola oil. There's nothing all natural about it. So recently the courts have ruled that you can't call your stuff all natural without, you know, basically defrauding consumers. And then after this case against ConAgra, there's been a recent case filed against Frito-Lay, the giant chip giant, corn chip giant,
yeah,
because they've been marketing their products as all natural as well, and it's they're made with genetically engineered corn. So, but across the board, there's an entire industry. You go into a Whole Foods store, it looks great.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is the majority of the foods sold in there are not certified organic. They're so-called natural. And so we've got to make sure that this labeling fraud ends, that consumers know what they're buying when they pick up a product. And we believe if they know what they're buying, they're willing to spend more for organic food, which is healthier for you and for the planet.
So you're in Europe, in the EU, it is mandatory that food is labeled if it is contains genetically engineered material. Is that so, Ronnie Cummins?
That's right. The 27 nations of the European Union, mandatory labeling is required. And then there's 22 other nations around the world. And so people often ask in the United States, they say, well, how come I didn't see any genetically engineered foods for sale in Europe, neither in grocery stores nor in restaurants? Well, the answer to that is It's not that they're banned, all these crops. Some of them are banned. But most of them, it would be perfectly legal. But the European Union business community understands quite well, and the farming community, is that you label the stuff truthfully, consumers don't want it, and they will boycott your product. McDonald's in the European Union is GMO-free, or Starbucks is GMO-free. Walmart, by God, is GMO-free in Europe. Not because they feel bad about what they're selling to consumers, because they know that if you label your stuff as containing genetically engineered ingredients in the European Union, it's like painting a skull and crossbones on it. So we have been, we fought for over a decade in the U.S. for labeling. Every poll ever taken has shown that, U.S. and Canadian consumers, 90 to 95% want mandatory labeling, but the government has understood if you label the stuff, people won't buy it, so they have fought off labeling. So, in the U.S. today, our federal government is still corrupt, and they listen more to Monsanto and ConAgra and McDonald's than they do to the voters. So that's why in California we're having to go the route of direct democracy, where we're collecting 800,000 signatures of registered voters, and we're going to put this measure on the ballot in November, whether the politicians like it or not. And, the polls show 80 to 85% of Californians support labeling, so I believe even if Monsanto spends $50 million, along with the Farm Bureau and Grocery Manufacturers Association, we're still going to be able to defeat them. And once we can restore consumer choice through truthful labeling about GMOs, we can start to influence the marketplace and influence the number of farmers who are going to be willing to grow genetically engineered crops.
Well, Ronnie, you've said in your writings that if one state like Vermont or California votes for mandatory labeling of food with genetically engineered material, then that really will affect and impact every other state in the United States. How is that so?
Well, it's so because if you have a national brand name like, say, Kellogg's Corn Flakes, if they have to produce proof that they're not using genetically engineered corn, and they can't do this, this would mean they would have to label in a state that required labeling. So it would be pretty embarrassing for Kellogg's to admit, say, in California, that their corn contained genetically engineered ingredients, and then not admit that in the other 49 states. So essentially, state law will, in terms of labeling a product that's distributed nationally and internationally, will have the same impact as federal law. Now, a small state like Vermont, which only has, half a million people or so, it's possible the big food companies would refuse to sell their products into Vermont rather than label them truthfully as containing genetically engineered ingredients, but they certainly can't do that for California, which is over 10% of the nation's population. And so this is the big, this is the battle royale that we've been waiting for with the genetically engineered foods ever since the first one came on the market in 1994. And they have been able to get the Bush administrations and Clinton and now Obama to not come out for mandatory labeling, even though 90% of the public want it. But now we're just going to go around the corruption in Washington, D.C., and go to the state level. And I believe it's just a matter of time till we, pass a law for labeling. And then, of course, we've got a lot of other issues we have to deal with, but that will help. It will increase organic sales tremendously, probably 50% within a year or two. And it will expose the fact that all these foods that Americans don't realize have been genetically engineered will be exposed for what they are. The other part of these labels, the way the legislation reads that we're trying to pass in California and other states, it says, this product contains genetically engineered ingredients and may not be labeled or advertised as natural. That's going to change the whole dynamics of the industry.
But then you see Ronnie Cummins, I don't understand, because millions of acres of genetically modified soybeans, corn, cotton, alfalfa, canola, sugar beets, all over America is genetically engineered. So what are they going to do with this food, number one? Number two, the seeds blow in the wind and they contaminate farms that don't grow genetically engineered food. And how are they going to get rid of this blasted stuff to start planting crops that don't contain genetically engineered food? How is it going to happen to provide cornflakes on the table of every single American household, you know?
Well, first off, most genetically engineered crops in the U.S. and worldwide go into animal feed, about 80%
of
them.
Oh, really?
Not into, you know, human food. So probably the impact of this first labeling law in North America will be in the human food. But we intend to follow up, as campaigners have followed up in the European Union, with laws that require any meat or animal products from animals that have been fed genetically engineered feed will have to be labeled as well. That'll be step two in this thing. As to the contamination, which is occurring and has been occurring for over a decade, where the GMO corn or canola or soybeans contaminate the non-GMO or even the organic in some cases, we're finally starting to see there's a lawsuit that just started this week in New York City where a bunch of organic farmers are suing Monsanto for just this very reason, that you are destroying the ability of farmers to use non-genetically engineered seeds and to grow organically by putting these crops out in the open environment where you know they are not only likely, they will contaminate nearby farms. So there's starting to be a much greater consciousness. I see Monsanto was just voted the worst corporation in the world for 2011.
Excellent.
People all over the world are getting hip to the fact that this biotech bullying is not right ethically and in terms of what it's doing to the environment. And I think people are going to fight back. In the European Union, they're now moving in more and more places to require meat and animal products to be labeled if they're genetically engineered. And there's more and more laws. Like Germany has a very good law that basically says if a farmer's crops get contaminated with GMOs, genetically modified organisms, the farmer automatically gets reimbursed out of a fund in Germany that is, it's Monsanto and the other biotech companies or any farmers that are using these genetically engineered seeds. So I think we're moving in that direction, but thank goodness we are, because the 10% of the world's cultivated cropland right now has genetically engineered crops growing on it. And as we're moving into a period, obviously, where the climate crisis, the chaotic weather becomes the norm, we're going to need all these open pollinated varieties of seeds that can survive drought, that can survive floods, that can survive more intense heat. And we're going to have to break the seed monopoly that has started to develop around the world, where literally five companies, including Monsanto, now control over half the seed stocks in the world.
Well, also, Ronnie, I'm interviewing Ronnie Cummins, who's the founder and director of the Organic Consumers Association. But then we need to also think about the fact that they have put nicotinoids and insecticides in the corn so that when the bees fertilize the flowers to produce the corn and the like, the bees die because they are trying to kill insects that might eat the corn and stuff. So there's a huge decrease in bees now in many countries throughout the world, including the US. It's called colony collapse disorder, CCD. And, of course, most crops that we produce especially the fruit trees, require fertilization by the bees to produce the fruit and the like. So what they're doing is destroying the mechanism by which food can be produced. Would you like to address that issue, Ronnie Cummins?
Yes, I think beekeepers all over the world are up in arms, and now all farmers and consumers are starting to get up in arms about this massive extermination of bee colonies. And it's turning out that a class of pesticides produced by DuPont, I think they're called nicotinoids, are one of the major factors killing off the bees, and that we've got to stop this ASAP. Of course, in the United States, the government is so far doing nothing, but there's now a lot of pressure in the European Union, and we have got to stop this genocidal attack on the bees, because the bees, are responsible for pollinating. I think it's about 30% of all the food that we eat. So this is another example of how letting big corporations control our policies, in this case for food and farming and patenting, has led to what can only be described as a suicide economy, where if we don't stop these GMOs and these toxic pesticides from proliferating, if we don't stop, in the U.S., they pour 24 billion pounds of chemical fertilizers on farmland every year. It's washing off into the Mississippi River Basin, killing a zone in the Gulf of Mexico as big as the state of Rhode Island. I mean, there's over 400 of these dead zones now across the country. So it is a matter of life and death, our food and farming system. We have got to go back to the traditional ways of organic agriculture. Time is, we don't have an unlimited amount of time to turn this stuff around.
Now, the nitrogen fertilizers that they use are made from oil, aren't they, number one? Number two, the nitrogen, they produce nitrous oxide when they're used in the soil. Nitrous oxide is a potent global warming gas. So by using, 24 million tons of nitrogen fertilizers per year, I think you just said, we're adding enormously to global warming. And then when you talked about dead zones, I just want to explain to people, when water is contaminated with nitrogen in the streams, in the rivers, and then flows into the sea, what happens is that the nitrogen is a fertilizer, not just for the plants that it's fertilized, but for the algae in the sea. And the algae proliferate enormously and use up all the oxygen in the water, so therefore the fish die. And that's what creates the dead zones, and it's called eutrophication. So the sort of, there's a sequence of events from the production of nitrogen fertilizers, which for sure creates more global warming from oil, into destruction of the soil and production of more nitrous oxide that causes global warming, into eutrophication of sea zones where fish used to be prolific. I want you to talk now, Ronnie Cummins, about alfalfa and what's happening. What is alfalfa? What is it used for? What are the recent decisions about alfalfa? And what do they use to fertilize it? And the like, please.
Yes, alfalfa is a pasture grass grown widely in the United States. It's the fourth largest crop in the entire country in terms of acreage, and it's from the standpoint of conventional agriculture, it's one of the more benign crops. I mean, it uses a lot of water to produce alfalfa. But typically, you don't need to put chemical fertilizer on alfalfa, and you use very little pesticides. 94% of the alfalfa crop in the United States right now, they're not using an herbicide on it because they're pretty resistant. Well, so this is, it's certainly not all grown organically across the United States. There are areas where you shouldn't be growing alfalfa because it uses so much water, but in general, it's a fairly benign crop compared to non-organic corn or soybeans, for example, or cotton. However, Monsanto has decided that they want to grow genetically engineered alfalfa, which will be able to be sprayed with Roundup, the world's top-selling herbicide, and be able to survive these heavy sprayings. So,
why do they want to use Roundup?
Well, Monsanto can convince farmers these days that they'll have higher yields, even if they end up not having higher yields, or that this is the technical wave of the future. They've got all these people like Bill Gates and the White House extolling the virtues of genetically engineered crops. I mean, but, from the standpoint, it's hard to believe that a farmer would be so ignorant as to believe these lies because, hey, if you're not having to use a lot of chemical fertilizer now and you're not using herbicide, why would you want a genetically engineered variety designed to be sprayed with an herbicide? In any case, there's lots of farmers in the U.S. Who will buy these genetically engineered alfalfa seeds, and they're going to plant them. And immediately, alfalfa is spread. They're pollinated by bees and other pollinators. And if you grow genetically engineered alfalfa anywhere out there, it's going to spread. And they say, oh, it only spreads a radius of 5 miles a year or something like that. But the bottom line is it's going to spread. It's going to contaminate the seed stocks for the entire alfalfa crop in the U.S. over time, including contaminating organic. So we've all been shocked to see the Obama administration just approve these things and the federal courts approve them. And even though the entire organic industry and most of the alfalfa growers in the U.S., 90% of them are saying they don't want this, they're going to go ahead with it.
Well, now, wait a minute. So you plant the alfalfa, which is genetically engineered to withstand the very toxic effects of Roundup. And so the Roundup then gets sprayed to kill the broad-leafed weeds that grow amongst the alfalfa. And the way Roundup works is that it inhibits the photosynthesis process in plants. But if you have a resistant plant like alfalfa, then that can survive and the weeds will die.
So they're going to tell farmers, hey, you'll get a 10% or more yield increase.
Because you kill the weeds.
Yeah. And, but the bottom line is that as the weeds are going to develop resistance. First of all, you're not even going to make money by that kind of yield increase because the genetically engineered seeds cost more and you have to buy the Roundup. But after a year or two, what you're going to start to see develop, because we've seen this develop all over the U.S. with over two dozen now, super weeds, as they're called, weeds start to develop resistance to glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup. And so soon, you're going to have to spray 2,4-D, a more powerful herbicide, as well as Roundup, in order to maintain this chemical treadmill.
These so it's people a crazed are nuts. They
technology.
Don't yeah.
they but don't. They control the Monsanto and the biotech industry and the chemical pesticide industry. They basically control the advertising and all the farm journals. They control the editorial content and all the farm journals. So farmers are reading constantly this propaganda about how great genetically engineered crops are and how great, basically industrial, chemical-intensive, energy-intensive agricultural methods are. The university ag departments are still controlled by the chemical and GMO.
How? How?
They control them by basically the endowments or the donations that are made to the universities.
Money.
And by the control that corporate agribusiness has over the USDA. So that what students are learning in universities is how great chemical and GMO agriculture is. And, you know, there's a little foothold now for learning about organic and sustainable agriculture. Places like the University of Washington have a good program. I mean, there are Santa Cruz, one of the universities in the California system, has a good program. But in general, organics are still marginalized in the ag departments of the colleges and universities. And we have these, you know, we've got 3,200 counties in the United States, and you have these agricultural county extension agents who basically are funded by the state and funded by the federal government, USDA, to help farmers. But these extension agents are basically giving bad advice in most cases to people, you know, telling them the chemicals and GMOs are the way to go. I mean, all the way down to, we have these things called 4-H clubs in America, and you know, Future Farmers of America. These are clubs of junior high and high school students that they start to get acquainted with the farming practices. And when you look at the donors for these things, again, Monsanto and the rest of them are in there. So we're brainwashing our rural youth from an early age that better living through chemicals, better living through GMOs, and then it extends to the banks. The banks don't want to give loans, crop loans, to farmers if they're planting organic, say, compared to planting Monsanto's GMO seeds. You know, so you can't get a loan often. You know, in a rural area, say you're growing corn or soybeans or canola, or one of these large crops, wheat, alfalfa. There's only often one or two buyers for your product, and this is a giant agribusiness conglomerate like Cargill or Bunge or, you know,
Archer Daniels Midland.
So you've got a very limited number of people who buy your crop. They're not interested often in organic. They're interested in, you know, the crops they can make the most money on. So it's a horrible situation. Most farm income in the United States is derived from the jobs that farmers have off the farm. So they're looking at techniques of farming that take them less time. And one thing about the Roundup Ready crops is you just spray them all over the place, and you basically become a tractor driver who has an off-farm job. So that's how they've been able to penetrate the market to such a great extent in the United States, where 90% of the soybeans, 75% of the corn, 95% of the sugar beets and canola are now genetically engineered. It's also the fact, as we, you know, alluded to earlier in the show, is that consumers, we haven't had truthful labeling. As soon as we have truthful labeling, we're going to see the acreage of these crops start to go down.
And tell me, Ronnie Cummins, what does Roundup do to the soil once it's in the soil? Doesn't it destroy microorganisms and produce more CO2 production?
It is. I mean, people are often confused about global warming, and, you know, they say, well, yeah, we got these 80 billion tons of carbon up in the atmosphere, and it's changed the weather, it's heated up the earth already 0.8 degrees centigrade, and it's scary what's likely to happen. Well, a lot of people don't realize that there used to be twice as much of this carbon, organic matter, in the soil 50 years ago or so as there is today. So in other words, the carbon that used to be in the soil, a lot of it's up there in the atmosphere disrupting the climate right now.
Why? Why?
And why is it? Because we have destroyed this soil food web, this living soil, by the massive use of chemical fertilizers and pesticides and now GMO crops that literally kill the soil. And so if we want to stabilize the climate, if we want plants that are more nutritious, if we want to be healthier people, we have got to go to make the great transition back to organic and get away from the chemicals and the GMOs. And by doing so, we're going to, the leading climatologist in the world, James Hansen, says that we can sequester 50 parts per million, essentially, of CO2 over the next 40 years through organic soil management and reforestation, which is also part of this. But we have to stop killing this oil food web, because this is the nature's mechanism for balancing out the greenhouse gases in the atmosphere so that we have a stable climate like we've enjoyed on the Earth for the last 10,000 years.
So the soil food web is made of microorganisms, bacteria, fungi, and the like, and it's very potent and a living food web within the soil. I want you to talk about sterile seeds. I can't remember what they've been labelled, Ronnie Cummins, but the ones they sell to India, and they tell the farmers these are great seeds. And you've got to buy them from us, and you're not allowed to get your seeds from your old crops like you always have for centuries, and the seeds only last 1 year and they're sterile, so that next year when they want to plant their crop, they have to buy another whole set of seeds. Can you talk about that?
Yes, we've seen, for 10,000 years, farmers have been cultivating crops, and they've been saving the seeds of the plants that did the best, and they've been replanting those, sharing them with their neighbors, taking note of different climate patterns in their areas and which seeds, which varieties worked, and so on and so forth. But you've had, since the 1920s, with the development of hybrid seeds, and now the 1990s, it's accelerated greatly with the development of patented hybrid and genetically engineered seeds that industry has tried to basically start to monopolize this the germplasm of the plants on the planet for profit. And they are trying to force farmers into stop the practice of saving seeds. They're trying to criminalize this practice by saying that they're violating corporations' intellectual property rights. And we're seeing, for example, in Mexico, where I live a good part of the time, is climate change is really devastating a lot of the corn farmers in the country. And the ones who are doing the best, in spite of drought conditions and basically violently oscillating weather patterns, is people who plant organic, open-pollinated seeds and plant a number of varieties are doing much better. The people who are planting the hybrid seeds are—they're not getting any, they're not getting any production, any harvest. And so we need more and more varieties. We need more and more cooperation between the farmers on the ground all over the world to save the organic open pollinated varieties so that we can cope with the changing weather that we're going to find. And instead, what we see are Monsanto and a handful of other biotech and chemical companies trying as rapidly as possible to monopolize the world's seed stocks,
seed bank,
to patent them and to restrict the varieties.
But what about the sterile seeds? You didn't answer that question.
The Terminator seeds.
Terminator seeds, yes.
This was a patent developed jointly by U.S. Department of Agriculture and a division of Monsanto. It's a brilliant seed from the standpoint of greedy capitalism, because it even a farmer can't save a Terminator seed. If they want to, they can save them, but when they plant them, they're not going to grow the second season. So the idea was you put this Terminator gene in a seed, and this will force the farmer to come back to you in year two and buy 100% of their seeds. And they'll always have to do this. But there was such an outrage all over the world in the year 2000, 2001. This international campaign started up. I know Organic Consumers was part of this campaign in the United States, but all over the world, farmers and consumer groups rose up and said, this is outrageous. So much bad publicity was coming down on Monsanto that they announced publicly that they were not going to commercialize the Terminator seed. Now, the U.S. Department of Agriculture never made that promise. So basically, Terminator seeds have still not been able to be commercialized, even though, you know, a lot of the seeds out there, for all practical purposes, you can't save them. And they've come up with another technology, which has been dubbed the traitor technology, after trait, T-R-A-I-T. But basically, there's ways to make seeds infertile in the sense that you save a seed, a traitor seed, and unless you spray it with a proprietary chemical, tetracycline or something like that, it either won't grow or it won't set seed or whatever. So they're trying to get around the very bad publicity. This Terminator technology was just a horrible public relations disaster for Monsanto. People are still talking about it worldwide as an act of genocide, even though a lot of people don't realize, well, it's not commercialized. You know, it's not out there yet. But the only reason it's not out there is because people, you know, basically threatened to have a world rebellion around this issue if they didn't.
Now, there's another issue I just read in your articles, Ronnie Cummins, that a Swedish study has found that workers who spray Roundup on crops have an increased incidence of cancer. Would you like to address that?
Yes. I mean, Roundup actually came on the market by Monsanto and became the world's most popular herbicide based on the propaganda claim, turns out now a lie, that this was a more benevolent herbicide, that some of this other stuff was truly dangerous, according to Monsanto, and that they were, you know, going to have a safe product, which degraded in the environment quickly, you know, was not that dangerous, so on and so forth. Well, now it turns out that Roundup is just as dangerous as 2,4-D and these other horrific chemicals that they were supposed to replace. It just took longer for scientists to be able to point to the evidence. You know, for example, in Argentina, there's peer-reviewed studies that show that villages where Roundup has been sprayed have a alarmingly higher rate of childhood cancers, miscarriages, and reproductive defects. And, you know, Monsanto has tried their best to suppress this kind of evidence from coming out, but I think the word is now getting out is that Roundup, the most popular herbicide in the world, is extremely dangerous, and that we are, you know, playing a form of biological roulette to keep letting them commercialize these Roundup-resistant crops.
So, Ronnie,
and
how
they not only produce super weeds, they are poisoning animals and humans and the soil food web.
How much of the food we eat, Ronnie, has been sprayed with herbicides and toxic chemicals before we eat it? It always freaks me out a bit. You know, you buy an apple and it's been waxed on the outside, so you can't wash any herbicides off the apple before you eat it because it's sort of locked in under the wax. And I look at beautiful celery and everything else I buy, particularly in the States, but also in Australia. How much of it is actually polluted with nasty chemicals?
Well, if you do laboratory tests on non-organic produce and fruits in the United States, you'll find that 99% of it has pesticide or herbicide residues. And that's the reason why so many people, I mean, recent polls show that the majority of Americans say they prefer organic food. I mean, they're certainly not buying it as the main food that they purchase, but they know that they want to purchase organic food if they can afford it, if it's available. The major reason when you ask them is they understand that so-called conventional food is, you know, has been drenched with pesticides and herbicides and fungicides. And
some of which are carcinogenic.
Indeed. And it's, you know, I mean, we had agriculture for thousands of years without, you know, heavy doses of these chemical fertilizers and pesticides, herbicides, and that's all organic is. Organic is Yes, it's modern adaptations that are more advanced in some ways, but it's traditional agriculture, natural, you know.
So people are feeding their babies with this food that's been drenched in toxic chemicals. It really, as a pediatrician, gets to me. I think, what the hell are we doing?
Even the U.S. government acknowledged in the 90s that, you know, young children, infants and children are, you know, up to 100 times more susceptible to pesticide residues than adults. I mean, we've got all the so-called safety testing has been done on, you know, 160-pound males, supposedly, and meanwhile, it's children that are ingesting a larger percentage of these pesticide residues, and of course, antibiotic residues are just as scary, if not scarier. We've got an epidemic of antibiotic-resistant infections, diseases now, and you know, a good reason for that is because 80% of all the antibiotics by weight in the United States are fed to animals, not to humans.
Yeah.
And so the food, every time you take a bite of a non-organic animal product or, you know, drink a swallow of milk that's non-organic, you're getting not only the pesticide residues, you're getting a dose of antibiotics at the same time.
Yeah, well, we have these revolting antibiotic-resistant bacteria, and we think it's partly because we use antibiotics too injudiciously, and we do in medicine, but the antibiotics, as you just pointed out, that are used in agriculture are just extraordinary. And that's not attended to by the medical profession. I don't understand why we're so blind, deaf and dumb to why we're getting so many resistant bacteria. The other thing is that as I read your material, I see that Michael Taylor, former Monsanto vice president, is now the FDA deputy commissioner for foods. Roger Beachy, the former director of Monsanto-funded Danforth Plant Science Center, is the director of the USDA National Institute of Food and Agriculture. And it goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yes. I mean, in the United States, we do not have the sort of European tradition of civil servants and regulatory officials are independent and serving the public interest. In the United States, basically, the USDA, FDA, EPA, other regulatory agencies, Centers for Disease Control, these are typically filled with people who either came out of industry for a while to serve in government so that they could benefit their industry clients, or they are, you know, government officials who are looking forward to a high-paying job when they leave the government to work for the same industries that they supposedly regulated while they were in there. This is obviously a crazed system that has resulted in we have a public health epidemic and disaster unfolding in the United States, and a good part of that is the fact that the Food and Drug Administration and the USDA do not regulate food safety, and the other agencies are not regulating the toxins in the environment. So we're literally headed for bankruptcy based on the fact that our population has been made so sick by the culture and the environment and the food that, you know, the system is going to collapse.
Tell us about Clarence. Tell us about Clarence Thomas, Ronnie Cummins.
Yes, Clarence Thomas. I mean, we noticed that when there was the Supreme Court made a decision about genetically engineered crops a year or two ago, narrowly, you know, they ruled in Monsanto's favor. But one of the judges voting in their favor is Clarence Thomas, formerly a lawyer for Monsanto, now a very controversial, very extreme right Supreme Court justice. So basically, another reason why grassroots activists in the United States have decided that we've got to have ballot initiatives at the state level, we've got to fight them on a different terrain of battle, is that the Supreme Court is now biotech-friendly, if you will. The White House is now pro-biotech, and of course both houses of the federal Congress. But when you look at who they're getting money from, you start to understand why they don't listen to their constituents and why they're listening to Monsanto and the big multinational corporate agribusiness corporation.
So I see that you've been labeled public enemy number one by Monsanto, Ronnie Cummins.
Well, I'm very proud of that. I think down the road, people are going to be very happy that this generation or these several generations stood up here after the first decade of the 21st century and basically are saying we can no longer let the 1%, the multinational corporations and the wealthy, dictate the policies of the other 99%, because we're literally on a trajectory to disaster, you know, climate disaster. Still, the long-standing threat of nuclear war is not over. The disastrous overuse and lack of conservation of things like energy supplies and water and soil and whatever. We're in the age of peak everything, not just peak oil, and climate disaster staring us in the face. And the bottom line of all this is that we do not have functioning democracies in the industrialized or the developing world. We have the 1% basically dictatorially ruling over the other 99%.
Yeah, well said. So do you belong to the Occupy movement, Ronnie?
Yes, indeed. And one of the most popular themes across the United States and Canada and Mexico is, this Millions Against Monsanto campaign that we have. People all over the world have identified a number of corporations that exemplify this dictatorial rule that's leading us over the cliff. And certainly Monsanto is one of the most hated corporations out there now because of the way they behave. So we did a protest last week at the Monsanto's corporate headquarters in St. Louis for their annual shareholders meeting. And we're going to be calling later in the year for a global day of action, Occupy Monsanto Global Day of Action.
Wonderful, wonderful.
All over the world.
What about Archer Daniels Midlands? They really give me the dry rot. You know, they advertise all the time on PBS, sponsored by Archer Daniels, and one of their chief executives is in jail, and they're one of these companies making genetically modified foods and all the rest. Do you want to talk about them?
Yes. When you look more closely, you see that that the chemical and biotechnology and pesticide chemical fertilizer companies are one big happy family with the giant grain monopolies of the world, the Cargills, the Archer Daniel Midlands, the Bunge people. And that when they, for example, in terms of genetically engineered foods, Monsanto and Archer Daniels Midland have always been right there with Monsanto, making sure that we don't have labeling laws in the United States, making sure that we don't have liability laws for genetic pollution. So they basically benefit from the fact that these, you know, this monopoly control over the soybean and corn and grain sector is primarily genetically engineered crops. So I'd say that all of them are in the business of producing, climate destabilizing crops, and they're pushing this idea that biofuels, for example, are a solution to our addiction to petroleum, when in fact it takes more fossil fuel to produce genetically engineered corn and make ethanol from it than it actually does to produce the gasoline.
Yes.
So they're pushing, along with Monsanto, this notion of biofuels being a good thing. They're now planting genetically engineered trees across the world, saying this is the solution to deforestation. This is how we can help to stabilize the climate. And it's basically, we're up against not just the biotech bullies like Monsanto, but Big Ag in general, what we call in the United States Food Incorporated or Food Inc. And Archer Daniels Midland and Walmart and Cargill and McDonald's and the rest, Kellogg's, Nestle's, Unilever. When you get right down to it, they're one big happy family who are united around the fact that they are the 1%. They want to keep dictating to the rest of us what we can eat, what we can grow. They want to brainwash us through their advertising, even on national public radio. One of the biggest advertisers is, as you pointed out, Archer Daniels Midland, calling themselves supermarket to the world.
To the world, yes, I love that, supermarket to the world. Well, now, Ronnie Cummins, it's been absolutely wonderful to talk to you today, and I'm sure everyone's going to be super fascinated because we all have to eat and we don't want to eat poisoned food. Would you like to give a website where people can go to read more of your very important material?
Yes, if you go to organicconsumers.org, one of the largest websites in North America, organicconsumers.org, you'll find we've archived over the last 14 years tens of thousands of articles on all these topics, and we put out a free weekly newsletter called Organic Bites that you can subscribe to, and we look forward to your visit to our site.
What about another one I see now, www.millionsagainstmonsanto.org?
Yes, we have a very large social media network around the world called Millions Against Monsanto on Facebook, and you can check us out and see if there's some Millions Against Monsanto groups functioning in your part of the world. If there aren't, go ahead and start one. We'll be glad to get into communication with you.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for this fabulous conversation, Ronnie Cummins, and I hope to see you on my travels in the U.S. sometime.
All right, keep up the good work, Ellen.
Yes, you too. You too. You're helping to save the planet. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
My guest today on If You Love This Planet was Ronnie Cummins, founder and director of the Organic Consumers Association in the United States. Thank you for listening today, and we look forward to being with you yet again next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to If You Love This Planet with Dr. Helen Caldicott. This program is broadcast on community radio across the United States, including our host station, KPFT Pacifica, Houston, Texas. This program is produced and engineered by Jazz Williams, co-produced by Scott Powell, and our publicity and outreach are coordinated by Amanda Bellerby. To listen to previous shows or to make a donation, go to our website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.